Morning.
And good morning.
So this morning, I'm going to talk about the Wizard of Oz. You know, 3 or 4 weeks ago I did money, and a little bit before that I did sex, so you know, now we're ready for the Wizard of Oz. The reason I'm talking about the Wizard of Oz is that my wife is reading a book, a biography of Frank Baum, B-A-U-M. And I thought, oh, cool. And so I could give a talk about Frank Baum, but I won't today, except to say that that Frank Baum was influenced by Eastern thought, believe it or not. He was influenced by the Theosophists, Madame Blavatsky, and he saw Vivekananda in Chicago at the World Conference of Religion in the 1890s. But before I begin, I'd like to thank our shakuhachi player for playing some wonderful meditative music to get us in the mood for the wizard.
That was a very old piece of Kelvin Ball's. 1400 years old. It's called Koku, which means bell ringing in the empty sky.
Uh-huh.
According to legends, it was composed after the death of Fuke Zenshin, who was the patriarch of the Fuke sect of Zen Buddhism. And his thing was he'd walk around the village ringing a bell, and he had predicted the day of his death. And the day he died, the villagers went to see him, and they opened his coffin, and it was empty. And what they heard was the sound of a bell ascending into the sky.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Now on to Dorothy. So, and this is my rendition, you guys. So, and my rendition actually comes from the book, which my father read to me when I was sick in bed. I saw the movie later, but when I was a boy, my father read to me. I was really sick, so he read it to me over a series of days while I was sick in bed. So, you know, it's kind of in me. So, Dorothy starts out in Kansas, and Frank Baum chose Kansas. He had actually never been to Kansas, but he thought it was the bleakest part of the United States. He'd seen pictures of it. It was flat. It was windswept. People looked like they were all terminally depressed from his point of view, from Frank. So he chose Kansas. So she's starting in Kansas, and she's an orphan. She doesn't have any parents. And there's a mean man. There's a man who's being mean to her. So she's starting in this sort of depressed atmosphere, in this atmosphere where life isn't very satisfying. And then what happens to her? She gets swooped up into a cyclone. She gets swooped up into a hurricane. Beyond the time sense, beyond conventional reality, there's something she doesn't understand at all that turns her over, and cyclones are all around, right? So the spiritual path, for often, not for all of us, we start with some sort of sense about, oh, this life is blah, this life is not okay, this life sucks or something. And then we have some experience that swoops us up. I mean, it can be a negative or a positive one, but it takes us for a few moments out of our conventional thinking, out of our conventional reality. Maybe the person we really deeply love dies. Maybe we have a near-death experience ourselves in a car crash or something. Maybe we sit a retreat, and in our first retreat we have a little awakening. When we look at the sky seems to be inside and outside and everywhere. So she gets swooped up. She's in that house, flying through the sky, and then she comes down and lands. And what does she land in? She lands in contrast to Kansas, which is all black and white. She lands in the story, all black. She lands in a multi-technicolor world where everything is brilliant color, brilliant movement. But she's not used to that world. She's never seen a world like that. It's kind of scary. It's kind of scary to have that much life, that much vividness, that much flow and interaction and color and sound and form, just blending one into the other. So it's scary. And she wants to go home. And then what happens? Then she meets Glinda the Good. She meets someone who is a spiritual friend for her, someone who is a spiritual brother or sister, or maybe a little bit of a mother, but not too much, a mentor, an advisor, which we all need if we're going to go on this path. We all need someone. We all need someone. And if we have multiple Glindas, that's cool. If we only have a Glinda that intermittently appears, that's okay. Her Glinda didn't hold her hand during the whole time on the yellow brick road. She intermittently appeared. So Glinda appears, and Glinda says, "Oh, well, there's the yellow brick road. That's the way that you'll be able to get home. And here, I'm going to give you something." And she gives her the ruby slippers that the Witch of the East has worn. Remember, her house has fallen on the Witch of the East? And she gives Dorothy the ruby slippers. And she says, "No, yellow brick road." So Dorothy then goes on the yellow brick road. That's our path, right? We call it Buddha's path. I don't care what you call it. It's our path. It's our path. We're on the path. And it's yellow. It's yellow. Early monks in Buddha's time, they all wore yellow. And in, as I was saying to Rosemary, everywhere but Japan, they all wear yellow. Because it signifies dawn. It signifies the rising sun. It signifies the birth of color and life and wonder into our lives. So entering on the yellow brick road is entering on the path of awakening, the path to wake up to this incredible whatever it is. So she enters on the yellow brick road. But it's not easy for her. Even on the yellow brick road, it's not easy. Because she doesn't know where the yellow brick road is going to go. It twists one way and another way. She doesn't get a map. Glinda the Good gives her no map. She says, "Oh, well, you can go see Oz, the great Buddha, the great Jesus, the great Prajnaparamita, and she will help you." She's transcendent. She's all-knowing. She will help you. Get home. Right? But you have to go on the yellow brick road. But she's lonely on the yellow brick road, and it twists and turns. Well, then she needs some friends. So three friends come along. Three members of her sangha come along, right? Her new sangha. Her new community. So there's the cowardly lion. He joins the group because he doesn't have courage to be on that road. But she has some courage. So together they have courage. Because even though that road is yellow and calm, the calmness itself can be kind of frightening to the mind that's always churning stuff out. Do you know that? The calmness itself can be kind of frightening. Kind of throws you off. You think you need to get back to where you were before. But she and the lion together then meet, I don't remember if the order is right, you guys. They then meet the woodman. The woodman comes. But he has no heart. And it takes heart to travel on this path. It takes heart. Because if you close yourself down, you're not really open to the path. You're just doing it. You're just doing it in kind of a military way, rather than an open way, rather than an inquisitive, intimate way. So you need heart. And when scary things come up, you want to close your heart down. And the woodman has a closed heart. So he needs to join with these other two people who have open hearts. So they form their sangha of three. Three-person sangha. And then, who comes along next? The scarecrow. Well, the scarecrow, this road takes discriminating intelligence. Because we think we're on it, and then we're off. And we get dissuaded by things. It takes intelligence. We have to kind of organize our mind, bring our minds back, make discriminations when someone comes along selling us something that tells us we'll get to Oz sooner if we just do this, that, or the other. So discriminating intelligence is so important in taking care of our lives in Buddhist practice, in Zen Buddhist practice. And so the scarecrow is the fourth member of the Sangha. So the Sangha then goes along, right? They go along and they have lots of adventures, and the Wicked Witch of the West is after them, right? But they hang together, they stay on the road. If I get freaked out sometimes, that's okay. If you do this practice, you'll get freaked out sometimes. Don't worry. It's par for the course. If you're entering some unknown field, which is beyond your thinking mind, beyond what you know, beyond what you remember, beyond what you project, it's gonna be shaky at some point. How could it not be? So the Wicked Witch of the West is doing her best, but they're hanging together, and they make a lot of progress on the road. Although it doesn't seem like they're making any progress because it's the same road and they don't know where it's going, right? You ever notice this in your practice? It turns one way, it turns another way, up, down, in, out. Seems like you were back where you were before. Well, of course. What do you expect? And then Dorothy comes to the poppy field, and she gets the poppy field, puts her to sleep, right? All those poppies, smell those poppies. Wow. So that's the intoxication that can happen after a while, after you practice it. It can be a negative intoxication. It can be just intoxication with the boredom of sitting facing the wall. That's a kind of intoxication. After you've been sitting for a while, you just kind of think, this is impossible. I'm just going to be bored and space out. So I'm intoxicated by spacing out. Or it can be an intoxication that comes from the intoxication of your monkey mind. Just after a while, you just give into it and let it just swing and just go with it. And you sit still and everybody thinks you're calm, but you ain't calm, honey. I'm speaking to the men as well as the women here. Or you can be intoxicated by the fact that during your retreat you had some wonderful opening, some wonderful stillness where you felt connected to everything. And you just want that. You want that. You don't let anything come in. You just cling to that. That's the poppy field. But luckily, she wakes up from the poppy field. And she gets back on the road. She gets back on the road. So she gets back on the road, and pretty soon she enters the Emerald City. And Glinda the Good shows her what direction Oz's castle is in. And she and her three friends, a four-person sangha, go to see the Great Oz. And they get to see they get an audience with the Great Oz. Imagine that. And when Dorothy looks at the Great Oz is a giant head, a huge head. When the Scarecrow looks at the Great Oz, she is a beautiful, enchanting, seductive woman. When the Tin Woodman looks at the Great Oz, he is a ravenous beast. When the Cowardly Lion looks at the Great Oz, a huge ball of fire. So they were in awe by the Great Oz. They're in awe, and they ask the Great Oz for help. And you know what they ask for? She wants to go home. He wants the heart. He wants the intelligence. He wants the courage, right? And what does the Great Oz say? He says, "Well, you have some work to do still, right? You've got to kill the Wicked Witch of the West. Then come back. Come back. Come back to Buddha then, right? Go kill the Wicked Witch of the West and then come back." So they're pretty inspired by the Great Oz. So they they head off with renewed vigor to practice on the path, to conquer the Wicked Witch of the West, to conquer the inner critic once and for all, to kill the inner critic, so there can be opening, so there can be life, so there be connection with everything. And they get to the Wicked Witch of the West area where she hangs out, and what's it full of? An army of monkeys. You ever experienced this in your sitting? An army of monkeys? And these monkeys are arrayed against them. They're arrayed against them. And you know, if you see the movie there, it shows, well, the movie and the book are different, but they're arrayed and they're doing all kinds of things to try to get them. But somehow Dorothy gets in up close anyway, remember? She gets up close, and the Scarecrow gets up close, and they all get up close. And then the Scarecrow catches on fire. And immediately, Dorothy throws water on the Scarecrow to put him out, to take care of her friend, to support her friend in the Sangha. She's completely self-forgetful in that moment. She has no idea of self or other. Just helping. And what does she do? Well, she puts the water on the Scarecrow, but it also hits the witch. And it melts the witch so that the witch dies. The melting of the water. So Dorothy's self-forgetfulness to help her friend who is in need, at a really dangerous time, a really time when her life is in peril, kills the witch, kills the inner critic. The inner critic stops. It's gone completely. And the monkeys are still there, but the monkeys have lost their leader. The monkeys will hang around forever, you guys. But once they lose their leader, they're not that big a deal. They're just not that big a deal. They'll still cause all kinds of mischief. But once they lose their leader, they've lost their power. They're just more... entertaining. Sometimes it's kind of rude entertainment, but still entertainment. So the Wicked Witch is dead. Wow. The Wicked Witch is dead. Wow. What freedom, what calmness, not to have that chattering mind always dominating her life, always dominating our lives. That what if, what should, wouldn't it have been better? Wouldn't it be worse? On and on and on. What relief. Now she's off to see the wizard so he can really take her, get her home, right? Really help her come home. So they go back. They go back to see the wizard. And they're in a pretty good spirits now. They're going to get their help. And then, of course, what happens? So the wizard isn't the wizard, right? The wizard is just a little guy behind the screen, and he falls out behind the screen. Whoops! Whoops! No wizard. So, let's talk about Buddha for a minute. The wizard first appeared in all these forms, right? So when we think about Buddha, Buddha from a historical point of view, we have lots of different Buddhisms, lots of different teachings about Buddha. We have the first teaching about Buddha and the Nikayas, in which Buddha is a man who attains nirvana, then leaves the world and doesn't come back after telling people to be allotted to themselves and not follow him, follow the Dharma. So there's one Buddha, that Buddha. Then a couple hundred years, we have the Lotus Sutra Buddha, the second manifestation of Oz, the Lotus Sutra Buddha. And the Lotus Sutra Buddha, well, that Nikaya Buddha was okay, but he wasn't the real Buddha. The real Buddha is in the Lotus Sutra. You should read the Lotus Sutra and you will know the real Buddha. And the real Buddha is omnipresent. It's the eternal principle taking form taking form as gods, taking form as human beings, taking form as plants, taking form as animals. It's a cosmic principle that pervades everything, pervades all life. That's the Buddha. That's the Mahayana Buddha, the big Buddha. Maha means big. That other Buddha was okay, but he wasn't big. Right? Everybody wants big, right? So we have the third appearance of Oz, which is the Zen appearance. Zen. Oh, a special teaching outside the scriptures, outside the Nikayas, outside the Lotus Sutra, outside all that stuff. No dependence on words and letters. We're beyond that, words and letters in our sect, right? Direct pointing to the heart mind. So the Buddha then, mind-to-mind transmission in the lineage from Buddha to Mahakasapa to whoever, to whomever, to whomever, to moi. To moi. Woo! Woo! This is the one. This is the one, right? This is the one. And then we have the fourth manifestation of Oz, which is Vajrayana. Ah, the great diamond, Vajrayana. Oh, those first three were okay, but those are all preliminary. Those are preliminary to the great Buddha who is the diamond Buddha. The diamond Buddha who cuts through everything and who has great tantric powers. If you do the right rituals, if you do the right ceremonies, you'll experience this tantric, wonderful tantric reality. Those others are fine, but this is the real Buddha. Okay, so we have that. We have those versions of Oz. And then what happens? Oz isn't Oz. So Yunmen was asked, which of these is the real Buddha? And what did Yunmen say? He said, a shit-wiping stick, right? A shit-wiping stick. And then Yunmen's disciple was kind of discouraged by that answer. So he asked someone else, and the other person said, kill, right? So we need to be careful about this stuff, don't we? We need to be careful about it. because community creates Buddha. Each of these communities create a different Buddha. We're creating our own here in Minneapolis. And that's wonderful. It's reciprocal. Reciprocal, right? Reciprocal. Buddha creates us, we create Buddhas. Jesus creates. I better not talk Christianity because I might get in trouble. I'll just stick with Buddha. Although I do believe that, actually. I do believe that with everybody, with Prajnaparamita, everybody. They create us, we create them. It's reciprocal. It's one reality, one seamless reality. And we forget that. We forget that. Because we're myth makers, and myths guide us. If they hadn't had the myth of the great Oz, they wouldn't have kept on the path. They needed that mythology. Mythology, these stories that we create are the stories that nurture us, the stories that give us hope. But they're stories, just stories. So anyway, the Oz is not Oz, Buddha is not Buddha, Oz is just this little guy. Oops, only 5'6", or maybe even shorter, who knows? Just this little guy. But this little guy is not dumb. He can also be a mentor. He's just not what people think, not what people thought. He can also do some things. He can also, what does he do? He gives the cowardly lion brain, right? He gives him a head full of bran, pins, and needles. And he tells him, it's a lot of brand new brains. This is from the book itself, you guys. It's a little corny, but a lot of brand new brains. Then he gives the Tin Woodman a silk heart stuffed with sawdust, and he gives the Cowardly Lion a potion of courage, and they are completely satisfied with the teaching. It's very helpful to them. Very supportive. But he can't help Dorothy get home. He can't help Dorothy. Nobody can help you on this. Ultimately, get home. Come to resting in your true home. Glinda can help you for a while. Wizard can help you for a while, but it's yours. It's your path. It's your path. So, but Glinda is still around for Dorothy, right? Glinda's still there. And Glinda says, well, remember those ruby slippers I gave you that you've been carrying around ever since you first entered on the path? And Dorothy said, oh, yeah. She said, well, put those on. And, of course, she puts them on, and they take her home. They take her home immediately. So she had the ruby slippers with her from the moment she started the path. From the moment she started the path, her Buddha nature was there to welcome her. Her still nature was there. The moment she stepped in the Zendo, the moment she took a deep breath, just one deep breath, and experienced her breath in the way she'd never experienced it before, with some real spaciousness, even though she'd only been in the Zendo for 1 minute, she was home. She had the potential for being home, but she didn't know it. She didn't really realize it. So finally she put on the slippers after going through all this stuff. But she had them all the time. Right? You've had them all the time. All the time you've had them. And then she goes home. Shh. But it's just there she is in her bed, in her room, and it's Kansas, and everything's the same. But now it's not black and white. It's technicolor. It's the same home. It's the same contour, completely flat. But within that flatness, the gradations of gray are incredible. Incredible. There's a rainbow within that gray. Within the austerity of her own room, there's so much variety, so many things going on that she had never noticed, that were always there. And she feels so much support. She's not an orphan anymore, because she's got support from all this. From all this. And so, that's the story. It's my version of the story. But don't believe it. Okay, well, that's what I wanted to say for today. Questions, comments? Yeah.
As a Jayhawk from the great state of Kansas, we believe that had Frank Baum ever come to Kansas, Dorothy would be living with Aunt Em in New Jersey.
Good. Did you actually know that he chose Kansas because he was a sort of...
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Realize.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He had never been there. And you know, the irony is that where do you think the guy was from? He was from North Dakota. So that was a little presumptuous on his part, don't you think? Other people.
Imagine that in a critic little guy or something, but the monkeys would still be around.
Mm-hmm.
I felt skeptical about that.
Well, there always is self-criticism in life for all of us. There's always self-criticism, but if we let go of the belief in that there's this organizing person in there organizing the criticism and needing to deal with the criticism and needing to make sense of it and needing to answer to it and needing to feel shame about it, then when the criticism comes in, there's a lightness to it because there's no central person trying to criticize the criticism, trying to control the criticism, trying to indulge portions of the criticism, trying to repress other parts. It's just there. So I didn't say the monkeys die or lose their power. It's just that when there's no organizing ringmaster, they just more come and go. Are you skeptical about that?
No. And I just feel like, I mean, for our life, we're going to have to discern, and we're going to have to be...
Of course. And of course, the scarecrow. I mean, the Oz gives the scarecrow that critical intelligence. We should never let go of that ability to discriminate. But if the discrimination is at the service of the fear-based Wicked Witch of the West, it's always going to be second guessing and third guessing and beating ourselves up and beating other people up. It's not going to be the discriminating intelligence that the scarecrow finally realizes he has. Yeah. Your own demons, of course. We can take this story internally, completely. I mean, really, it's a parable about the internal process of a spiritual path. I'm choosing the Zen path because that's the one I know, but you could probably take lots of paths. Other people? Yeah.
One of the paradoxes that kind of puzzles me is how we can come home. So that kind of feeling of resting and kind of conscious awareness, feeling home.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of what, you know, from Buddha teaching is like impermanence, emptiness.
Yes.
Impermanence.
Yes, that's right.
Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, and it, when we, what'd you say? Well, but we come home to what is, and sure things are changing. Sure, we can't count on anything, but we just let it be. We just learn to let things be, and the fact that everything is changing means that the panorama is always interesting. Because there's something new, always interesting. So the fact that things are changing, yeah, that's scary, but that's scary for the person who's trying to get things to stay the same. And in Oz, things don't stay the same, which is in Kansas, they don't stay the same. So what can I say? I don't know. I don't think that was a very helpful answer. Yeah, and just whatever is. It's all reality, wherever you are. You know, if you're in some kind of situation where you're in rush hour, and you know I've got to be to the Zen Center at 5:30 to do something or other, and I can't make it. Well, then I'm in rush hour, breathing. I'm in rush hour listening to the traffic. If my things get messed up, so there's an earthquake here and this building crashes and half of us die, and we're just here. We're just here supporting each other. I mean, what else is there anyway? And just to be here as the building's crashing, is that awful? I don't think so. It's just what's happening. It's just happening. And if we're here, we're here, and we're kind of not here because we're not clinging.
I think one of the problems that come up with as we talk is we have this sense of home and someplace safe.
Oh.
In the way where people define home, sometimes it's just
dress
and
home.
But
yeah.
It's really not safe.
Yeah. Well, it's safe, but it's not safe for you or for me, but it's safe because it's what is. I mean, safe, not safe, both safe and not safe, neither. I'm not being flippant here or glib. It's just what is. What is, and what is, even if this building is crashing on us, I mean, I've been watching this Haiti stuff, my God, but it's still the miracle of life and death. Right in the middle of suffering, some of those people in Haiti are doing some incredible things, incredible strength, in the midst of this huge chaos of change. And sometimes they die doing these incredible things, but then they just die. There's no leftover karma. They just die. Because there's nobody trying to organize it inside. And in a situation of extremity, the organizer really, really gets quiet. Really gets quiet. Because we have to give ourselves over to life. Yeah. Sure.
I grew up watching the movie.
Hey, did you? Uh-huh.
And the day before VCRs and DVDs, it came on every year. Once every year. And it came at the very end of winter. Black and white.
Oh, I see.
Period.
Uh-huh.
It was this wonderful, wonderful sign of hope every spring.
That's cool.
It also gives me comfort that even TV executives are capable of wisdom.
Oh, because they
do when
I see. I see. Good. Anything else? Yep.
You know, when you're talking about these phases of Buddhism.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Real curious, you know, because you know which one's right.
Oh, good luck. What?
Nargarjuna, none of the above.
Okay, well, okay.
All of the above. Yeah. But I guess the reason I say that is because it's you know, there's still places around now. There's all these different perspectives still.
Yeah.
Going on right now.
Yeah.
And if I just maybe think of if they're talking about emptiness or awareness, but yet we have this world of form, which is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So in this tradition of where they say form doesn't, this world of form doesn't differ from emptiness.
That's right.
So this world of form is evolving, right?
Yes. Yes, the community is creating Buddha. We're creating Buddha right here.
So Buddha is evolving.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
So with all these people, they said, this is the right Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. And then, right? And then this next one is, not Buddha plus.
Yeah, sure.
Buddha plus version 2.
Sure. Buddha plus, Buddha minus. I mean, Buddha plus, but also Buddha minus. Because as soon as we get hooked on this is the way. This is the one true way. Then we're back in the poppy field. We're back in the poppy field. Whether it's Zen fundamentalism or Lotus Sutra fundamentalism or Christian fundamentalism, we're in the poppy field. We're put to sleep by that false safety of this form, of the Lotus Sutra, of the Nikayas, of even the shit wiping stick. I mean, you know, people. Even that. Does that make sense?